The Dom Prep Journal is in Emmitsburg, Maryland at the National Fire Academy, and today we're with Dr. Dennis O'Neill, the Fire Academy's superintendent. Dr. O'Neill has produced over 20 publications on fire-related issues and was a professor in the master and doctorate degree programs in education at New York University prior to his appointment to the Fire Academy. He earned his doctorate in education from New York University and a master's degree in public administration from New Jersey City University. In 1995, he retired as fire chief in Jersey City in New Jersey after 24 years in the fire service. Dr. O'Neill, thanks so much for hosting us. It's a beautiful campus up here, and I'm sure a lot of our subscribers and listeners have been here for your courses, and it's an honor to be with you.
Thanks, John.
Well, most of those Dom Prep subscribers are familiar with the Fire Academy, as I said, and many have attended courses, either resident or off-campus courses, and some may not be familiar with your emergency response to terrorism course offerings that have been in service since 1996, I believe. Now, that predates other federal programs that you have, right?
That's correct, John. When I came here in 1995, I was fresh out of Jersey City, and maybe to refresh a few memories, the first bomb, or the bomb for the World Trade Center 1 was actually built in Jersey City, about six blocks from where I lived, and I was a deputy chief on duty when they started searching for those bombs. So there's a kind of couple of interesting stories. One was that they built a bomb in Jersey City, fused it, and drove it through the Holland Tunnel, fused. And had they hit the wrong bump or done the wrong thing, it would have gone off in the tunnel. They did some engineering studies on the Holland Tunnel and realized that the tunnel would have withstood the explosion. It would have shot every car in the tunnel out like a cannon, but the tunnel would have stayed intact, and they would have been able to rebuild what damage was done. But we spent a tremendous amount of time working with the FBI, Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, and other agencies trying to find out where those people were from. The eventual story is that it's not all about rocket science. The man who rented the truck that blew up in the Trade Center went back to get his deposit back. That was about three blocks from my house, and that's how they got arrested.
Well, can you tell us a little bit about your terrorism curriculum? I know that fits into the larger fire service curriculum, and you want to see those in context, but I may be way out of date, but you started with four courses in the curriculum series, and I think they are self-study, basic concepts, incident management, and tactical considerations. Would you tell us about what these teach and what else you have added to the series, like job aid?
Yeah. John, there's really a couple of things, but I think what I'd like to do is just take one step back and begin with the issue of terrorism. It's really not a new issue to America. It started probably in the 1600s. There were people that were terrorist agents against the United States government. And if you even come up into modern times, the FALN, the Puerto Rican Liberation Front, exploded almost 80 bombs in New York City in the late 70s and early 80s. People tend to forget that. If we look in the current time, from the Trade Center 1 to the Murrah Building bombing to the Atlanta bombings in the Olympics, and then the World Trade Center 2, and even the explosions in Madrid and London, once the event occurred, once the bomb went off, once the buildings came down, no one was seriously injured or killed. There's one exception to that, and that was a nurse at the Murrah Building bombing. As soon as the bomb went off, she went in to help people, and she got hit by a piece of debris. And, you know, you can pretty much count that, as tragic as it was, as part of the explosion. But what we're finding is that, with rare exception, and those rare exceptions have to do with the collection and preservation of evidence, and the fact that there's the possibility of a secondary device, and also the possibility of additional contamination, the skill sets necessary to respond to the World Trade Center or the Murrah Building bombing or the London subway system are the same skills that the fire service practices every day. And if you were to go back to the World Trade Center on September 12th, you would have discovered it to be probably the most dangerous place on the face of the earth. And for the next 6 to 8 months while they were working there, it was very, very dangerous. But nobody was seriously injured or killed. Now, of course, they're finding some diseases are starting to show up and things like that. But the skills necessary are pretty much basic skills. So what we need to be doing is making sure that people are aware of those delta changes, those top-end changes that a terrorist event versus a man-made or a natural event need to be addressed.
Mm-hmm. Now, you offer these courses as resident and off-campus, is that correct?
That's correct.
Now, how do your numbers in this curriculum compare to those in other curricula that you offer?
They're pretty much stable across. We offer about 11 different curriculum areas, from executive development to management to technical fire prevention and inspections and things like that. So by and large, across the curriculum area, we're going to get a certain percentage. If there's 11, well, maybe 10% of our students are going mm-hmm. through that curriculum as to the other. And it's kind of an eclectic approach. We have probably 200 different courses that are available through the National Fire Academy. And there are a number of weapons of mass destruction courses out there, so mm-hmm. there's a lot of competition. So the fire service folks are taking that at probably the same rate as they are with our other courses.
Mm-hmm. Are you seeing an upward trend line, and how does this compare with your more mainstream firefighter courses in terms of people registering?
Right now, to be very candid with you, John, it's probably stable. Mm-hmm. And I don't see an increase, and I suspect that unless or until there is another event, we won't see an increase. Mm-hmm. That the interest in that tends to diminish after a while. The next issue come up, of course, Katrina, and now we're back into natural and disasters and responding to mm-hmm. those kinds of things. So.
Obviously, you can find out about the courses on your website and what have you. Firefighters would know about that.
They would. The easiest way to tell people is just Google National Fire Academy, mm-hmm. and we'll hot link right to it, mm-hmm. and that's the simplest way to find us.
Now, the linkages that you have with your state programs with the states, that can be Googled as well. I mean, they're your courses that are administered through colleges and your states, correct?
That's correct. Mm-hmm. We have a good working relationship with all of the 50 state training systems in the country. And for our intents and purposes, they are our full partners. Those state training mm-hmm. directors are the superintendent of the National Fire Academy in their state. Mm-hmm. They can issue National Fire Academy certificates. We give them courses. We give them a small amount of money to deliver those courses. And once the students take those courses, they're registered in the National Fire Academy mm-hmm. database. So mm-hmm. in terms of transcripts and college credit recommendations, it carries all the way through.
Mm-hmm. Now, the reason why I'm asking this question is not so much for our firefighters, because they probably know all of this, but there are others like Coast Guard and FBI and other federal agency law enforcement, perhaps, mm-hmm. That would need to know. But you have a lot of those folks participating in the program as well, don't you?
Oh, we do. We train the FBI in fire investigation. We'll get one or two of those classes up each year. We train the Consumer Product Safety Commission on doing fire investigations as well. The civil support teams, the CSTs and hazardous materials for the National Guard, the regular Army and the Army Reserve, not all of them come through here, but many of them come through here mm-hmm. For the hazmat training as well. So we do normal military, Navy, Air Force, Marine Corps, and Army training. Individuals will come up and do that mm-hmm. as well. So we train people from the military from all around the world that come in and take that training as well.
So for those that aren't familiar, that are outside fire services, they ought to really check out the site and see what's there and how the certification can help them in their careers
sure.
and their preparedness. This also involves volunteer firefighters, too. You train them as well, right?
80% of the fire service in this country are men and women who volunteer their services. And from the smallest little burg in Wyoming someplace to, believe it or not, the New York City Fire Department has volunteer companies, and they come down here as well. If you look at some of the crazy things that happened in our country, the airplane crash in Shanksville was a very, very small rural community. The mad bomber up in Montana, Ted Kaczynski, was not in from a big metropolis city. I mean, these mm-hmm. are areas that are covered by very small rural fire departments. The other thing that rural fire departments are dealing with is methamphetamine production and manufacture, and the very, very dangerous chemicals associated mm-hmm. with that as well. So the volunteer service, while they may have fewer calls, faces the same exact dangers as the men and women of the New York City Fire Department. There may be an issue of frequency, there may be an issue of dimension, mm-hmm. but the problems are the same.
Now, let's talk a little bit about the transition to DHS. How has that transition affected the terrorism curriculum, for example, and the emphasis, and where is it going in the future?
Yeah. As with any government organization, as they reorganize the Department of, into the Department of Homeland Security, the roles and relationships will typically change. So there's this dance, if you will, between all the organizations. Previously, they may have had responsibility for X, Y, and Z, and now another organization comes in and they have a little bit of A, B, and C. And it's, as they say of legislation, you should never watch sausage or laws being made. It's probably not as pretty to see government reorganized. The nice thing about it is that we get to work with the men and women where the rubber meets the road. They have a very strong allegiance to the National Fire Academy, and when our courses come out, they tend to stay with us. Right now, most recently, we had a meeting down in the preparedness office, and some of the issues with the Office of Grants and Training and the United States Fire Administration and the chief medical officer, we're sorting those things out now. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, you know, every 2 weeks, I have 250 students coming here and probably another 1,000 students that we're training off campus each week. Mm-hmm. And that never goes away.
Yeah.
So when you come into work, you always have to keep your eye on that ball. The power brokering that goes on in Washington, D.C. is a distraction sometimes.
Yeah.
It's just not as important as what we do about training people.
We'll be going down to see George Forsman in a couple of weeks.
Great guy.
We had the pleasure of working with him going back to 1998, so we'll send him your regards.
Please.
Let me ask you how FEMA distributes grants. I think is it directly to states to enable them to deliver the NFA courses?
Yeah. Each state in the union is eligible for $28,000 in a grant, and they can use that to deliver National Fire Academy courses. There's another effort that we have. It's called endorsement. And endorsement is a process by which a state will submit a course to us for peer review. We send the courses out. We peer review them by state systems. And we use pretty much the same criteria as the American Council on Education uses to measure college courses. And if the course passes that review, it's put into the national curriculum, and they can also deliver those courses. The effort is so that states don't keep duplicating effort trying to develop the same kinds of courses. And now there's over 150 courses in that program. So they get the 40 that we give them, 150 in the endorsed program. So there's about 200 different courses that they have available at the local level. And in the, you know, the 8 and 10 and 15 person fire department in Utah someplace can get a National Fire Academy course. It's available to them.
That would be out of state as well, right?
They could
register, say, in South Carolina for a course.
Register in South Carolina and get a National Fire Academy certificate.
Yeah. How about further input that you might have gotten from colleges and the International Association of Fire Chiefs in the development of curriculum?
Great. The International Association of Fire Chiefs Professional Development Committee, about 120 colleges and universities around the country and the National Fire Academy have been working for about the last 6 years to develop what we call the professional development model. And that is a model curriculum for two-year programs, four-year programs, and graduate programs for fire science students. To encourage that effort, we have worked with the publishers of fire department textbooks and said, this is the model curriculum, and they've agreed to publish textbooks to that curriculum. But the end result of that, and I'll probably be looking at the wrong side of a lawn by the time it's implemented, is that a degree in fire science will mean the same as a degree in nursing, as the same in degree in law, that it's a standard degree, that people have the same skill sets across the country, that employers know what they're hiring, that schools know what they're teaching, and it's the first step in development of a profession. The second step, thanks to Oklahoma State University at Stillwater, we worked with them to encourage them to develop this International Journal of Fire Service Leadership and Management. And it's the first peer-reviewed fire research journal, and it'll be published hopefully this fall. And that's going to, of course, add to the professional literature. So we're well on our way to professional development, but it takes working with the fire chiefs. It takes working with the colleges and universities and the National Fire Academy to get all the players involved. And now states, for example, Virginia, where Undersecretary Forsman is from, is one of the first states to adopt the model, mm-hmm. and now they're going full force into it. And mm-hmm. little by little, we expect more states to do that.
Let's talk a little bit more about standards, which relates to what you just discussed about the fire service degree. The National Fire Protection Association standards, how do they relate to your courses? And talk to us a little bit about that.
Okay. The National Fire Protection Association promulgates standards. They're consensus-based standards around the country for fire service and for other things, building mm-hmm. construction, electricity, things like that. And the fire service is expected, not through any force of law, but probably through the tort process and litigation process, to comply with those regulations. And if you view them from one perspective, they become the minimum standard, okay, for you to practice a certain craft. The National Fire Academy tries to go above that standard. We try to develop and deliver the kinds of courses that you can't get anywhere else. So what we'll do is when we develop those courses, we will include the standards that we meet mm-hmm. so that when the student takes the course, they can take that certificate back home. It's cross-referenced and they'll get credit for it. But if you were to look at the same process, for example, as a driver's license, you have to be able to do a minimum number of things to get a driver's license. But if you want to drive across the country, or if you want to drive a tractor trailer, you need more mm-hmm. and more experience. So that's the kind of analogy that I like to use. It helps people understand.
Mm-hmm. Well, that leads me into another topic, which is related, which perhaps you touched on by implication with the fire science degree. Credentialing. You have a credentialing project. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. Under the National Incident Management System, there are six basic parts of the National Incident Management System. One of them is the Incident Command System, and another is called credentialing. And that's the process by which we identify people, both through their physical characteristics and their qualifications, to respond to a national event. Now, we got together with the 50 state training systems, probably 20 of the major fire service groups, the International Association of Firefighters, International Association of Fire Chiefs, the National Volunteer Fire Council, and brought them all together in an effort to identify what the minimum credentials would be for anyone to respond on a national event. Now, I want to emphasize that this is not for local response. It's not for a mutual aid between departments, and it's not for mutual aid between states.
Mm-hmm.
This is when the federal government says, we want firefighters, that we begin to look at the mm-hmm. national credentialing mm-hmm. system.
And now, would that be a regional under the DHS regionalization?
It would be by state.
Okay.
It would be, people would be identified by state. And mm-hmm. the first criteria is that the fire chief in charge of the department decides whether anyone in the department is going to participate, and then mm-hmm. who in the department is going to participate. Now, coming from the fire service, you know, everybody wants to go in these big national events. Everybody wanted to go to the World Trade Center. Everybody wanted to mm-hmm. go to Katrina. But no fire chief can send half their fire department to an event. I mean, mm-hmm. they need to mm-hmm. defend their home cities. So there may only be two or three or four people in a department that would have this credential.
Mm-hmm.
And the card is essentially a smart card that meets a standard. It's called FIPS 201.
Sure.
That doesn't mean anything to anybody, but mm-hmm. that's the standard. And it will have on the card the photo ID. It'll have the standards or the qualifications that the individual carries. In this way, at the scene of a national event, not only will the incident commander be able to request skill sets, I want somebody that's a hazmat technician, but also that they were called, that this person just didn't show mm-hmm. up self-dispatched. So when they order resources, that will be put into the system. And then when the resources show up, the card will be used to verify that, A, they were called, and, B, that they had the credentials. The fire service is the first of all of the responding agencies under the National Incident Management System to have forwarded their series of recommendations. But, of course, it costs money.
Mm-hmm.
And so now we're going to see, you know, where mm-hmm. the next steps are going to be.
Well, you mentioned NIMS, of course, in this discussion. Can we talk a little bit about the courses that you have on NIMS compliance,
sure.
which I know is another up-and-coming priority?
Well, I think if we look at what I'd rather talk about in terms of, instead of NIMS compliance, is NIMS performance.
Mm-hmm.
And the analogy that I like to use is that you can take a stack of books about violins and tell everybody in a class to read the books. As a matter of fact, you could tell everybody in the class to memorize the books about violins, but they'll never be able to pick up a violin and play in the symphony. Mm-hmm. And the Fire and Emergency Services is about playing in the symphony. So the information in the NIMS courses isn't as much memorizing or answering the questions as the ability to perform. And the only way that any organization can do that is to use it every day. The fire service, to use it at a car fire and a dumpster fire. And then when it becomes a one-family house fire, they can use it. And then when it goes to a two-family or an apartment building fire, you can use it. It's not something that you set aside for the big one because it'll never work. So when we talk about NIMS training, there's a familiarization and an orientation and an awareness that we'll do online and things like that. But it's up for the organization, if they want to make it work, that they're going to have to practice it and make sure that that's the only way people can begin to understand NIMS.
Dennis, I have a couple more questions that I want to pick up on some things we touched on earlier. Back to your longstanding relationship that the Academy has with your state and local partners. I want to stress that a little bit, that some might not be familiar, at least those that are not in the fire service. Tell us a little bit about the training resource and data exchange network, TRADE, and how that reaches the entire nation, and anything else that you think you want to ping for us.
Sure. The TRADE organization, it started in 1984. There's been some other federal agencies have gone into similar kinds of structures, but they don't seem to be able to touch down as deeply as we can. The TRADE organization includes all 50 state training systems and 165 of the largest fire departments in the country. Those are called metro departments. I was the chief in a metro fire department. And so we have the ability to reach the very, very large fire departments, mm-hmm. and we hand off our curriculum to them. And then the state training system handles the mid-sized departments and the smaller departments, and in some cases the metro-sized fire departments. But it's we send out a weekly newsletter. It's an e-newsletter these days, and we solicit issues that they're dealing with, and then we share that information with other people so that they can find out what new courses are coming online. They may have a specific training problem that when we send out the newsletter, we'll say, so-and-so is having a problem. Can you help them with this course, or can you give them this information? So it's a weekly correspondence with mm-hmm. all these people. We have about 6,000 people on that mailing list around the country.
Mm-hmm.
And we've become the hub in a spoke and wheel system of not only providing training, but providing solutions to problems that people have. And it's very strong. As superintendent, I could literally reach any fire department in the country probably within a day of whatever communications, because my communications go out and then the state systems mm-hmm. transmit it out to the locals, and it's an amazing system, and it provides us great support mm-hmm. too.
Now, in terms of that 6,000 subscriber list in the network, does that include also, let's say, Air Force and Navy base
military
fire services?
Yes.
And what about CSTs? You'd mentioned, and anybody else that's, let's say, working in these areas that take courses here.
Yeah, they can just sign up to be on that distribution mm-hmm. list through our webmail system.
Mm-hmm.
They can click in on our website, click in TRADE,
mm-hmm.
and get on a distribution system for all that information.
Well, one last question. You may have touched again a little bit on the fire science degree, but you have a higher education program. Anything that you want to tell us about that?
Sure. We're just in the process of completing the first of 7 courses, and then we'll begin the last 6 courses. It'll be a total of 13 courses that will be available online through 6 of the colleges and universities, and those will be 300 and 400, third and fourth year level mm-hmm. College courses that are NFA courses. If a state training system signs an agreement with a local college, a 2-year or 4-year college curriculum, and they agree to exchange college credit for certification received, and then the state training system will award certification elements to certification for college credit received. If we can establish that a partnership in a state, then we'll give courses to the colleges and universities. And it's really, we don't get involved in the middle of it. They settled that thing 165 years ago up in Gettysburg. We don't tell states what to do. But if they want to cooperate amongst themselves, we have tremendous resources that are available mm-hmm. to 2 and 4 year colleges.
Well, Dennis, this has just been great talking to you and great being here in Emmitsburg with you. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, John.
Thanks for your service to our country.
Well, thank you.
God bless.